Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Two Cups of Tea. I'm Chris Heath, and I've got the best job in podcasting, because I get to stick the kettle on, open a packet of milk chocolate hobnobs, and listen to another amazing life story from an older legend in their golden years. And today, you are in for a treat. I've travelled to Southampton to meet 87-year-old Brian O'Donnell, and he's led the most extraordinary life. Starting in 1931 in Guatemala at the foot of a volcano, raised amongst the Mayan Indians, his tale features deadly snakes, surfing on molten lava, cruise ships, the Guatemalan elections, hidden crocodiles, and not just one, but two pet monkeys. It's astonishing. It's also worth noting that Brian suffers from Alzheimer's. As is often the way, he occasionally struggles in the middle of sentences, but his long-term memory is intact, and he is a master storyteller. To be honest, it was a privilege to sit and talk with him. Towards the end of our conversation, he talks about how his symptoms affect him, and as he spoke, I realised that it's rare to hear descriptions of Alzheimer's symptoms from those who actually have the disease. Okay then, on with his amazing life story. I'll go in and set up the microphones while you listen to the theme tune. Let's do this. Now, a second ago, you asked me if I was a mush or a tosh. What does that mean? What's this mush and tosh thing?
The mush and tosh. Well, anyone that was born in Southampton, in Totten, is a tosh. If you're born in outside of Southampton, this side of the river, you're a mush. So the mushes and the toshes. And this is going back years and years when the dockers used to go down to load the various ships that come in, bananas and all that sort of thing. Well, I used to hear them going to work. I said, "Hello there, Tosh. All right, Mush. You okay?" "Yeah, I'm okay, Tosh." And that's the way, that was the greeting in those days.
Yeah. But Southampton is where you are now, but it's not where your life began, is it?
No.
So let's go right back to the beginning.
Right.
When were you born and where?
I was born in Bolcán, which is the name of a volcano.
Yes.
At the foot of the volcano.
A volcano?
Yeah. Our house was at the foot of the volcano. And this is why it's called Bolcán. You know?
Yeah. From the same,
my mother and father. My father was an expert in the coffee business. You can see pictures up there.
Oh, yes.
That's my granddad here. William O'Donnell, who was, what's the word I want? Sometimes, excuse me there, because...
Doesn't matter.
You know. William O'Donnell...
Yes.
...was a chief surgeon at St. Vincent's Hospital in Dublin. And after the war, he left and he had his own practice...
Yes.
...in Bournemouth. You go through the arcade, come out the other side, all Christchurch Road, My granddad had his surgery there.
Yeah.
And my father, he was English, born in Fishguard, you know, in Wales somewhere. And I was born in Guatemala, amongst the Mayan Indians. Hence, the language I speak, Erchi, is Mayan Indian. Now, the other language, of course, that I was born with was Spanish. Yo hablo español perfectamente. Tú no comprendes lo que te digo.
I'm fascinated by the volcano thing. So you were born at the foot. So is that where your house was?
Yeah.
What was the family setup when you were born? Was it your mother and father or
mother? Both my parents.
Yeah.
You know, my father was in charge of four coffee farms.
Yeah.
He had a very good job. He was an expert in coffee, actually. And I was born in at the bottom of the volcano, which is borderline with the coffee plantations.
Wow.
You know?
Was it an amazing smell all around you all the time?
Beautiful smell, actually. The coffee, when it's being toasted, and you take a whiff and it absolutely makes you...
And was it toasted there on the farm
Yeah, you had your bit. If you want, you toasted what you... We always had fresh coffee.
Oh, my God.
You know, and if you wanted a cup of coffee, I asked the cook, our cook then, Ophelia, can you put some... toast some coffee, please. And my father always had his toasted coffee. And we had talking about Ophelia, she was our cook.
Yes.
Then we had Narcissa, who was the cook's cook. And then we had, Vicente was the houseboy. We had the Narcissa. She was the one that made the chipates and all that sort of business, you know. So we had a household of, the servants used to look after us, actually.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And was it just you, or did you have brothers and sisters?
I had two brothers. I had two brothers.
Yeah.
Michael. And Patrick. Patrick is the artist that makes all these paintings, you know, because he contracted polio.
Oh, goodness.
Therefore, he learned how to write with his dodgy hand, if you like.
Yeah. So did you boss them around?
Well, yes, a little bit.
That's as it should be. So the people who work for you, Narcissa and all of those...
Narcissa, Ophelia, they're Indian.
Group. So they were the Mayan Indians?
Mayan Indians, that's right. So, I mean, I couldn't speak... I used to speak Erche.
Yeah.
I used to speak Spanish. I used to speak Mayan Indian. And if I went down to the kitchens or something to see Ophelia, it was all in Spanish. Because they were more educated, a little bit more educated.
Yeah.
The other, Narcissa, they would speak Kherchi only. My father learned how to speak Kherchi, and my mother learned how to speak Kherchi, funnily enough.
Wow.
He used to tell the boys off, the gardeners, we had three gardeners looking after the lawns and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Very comfortable. I used to live very comfortably.
Because as a child, I can imagine Kherchi...
Kherchi.
I imagine when you're younger, it's easy to learn, but it must have been for your mum and dad, that must have been quite difficult for them to learn.
Yeah. Well, I'm amazed about how my dad and my mother, how they learned Kherchi.
Yeah.
You know, and... she used to call the gardeners, hey, Vicente, come in. Hey, Vicente, come here, come in.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing my mother would be saying, Vicente, come in.
So is Kherchi, what language is it closest to? Is it closest to Spanish?
No, it's unique, Kherchi.
Because it sounds it, because when you were talking I was trying to listen for, you know, either phrases or things that sounded like another language, and it doesn't. It sounded.
No. What are you doing there?
It sounds like an idyllic childhood. So did you go and spend time with the Mayans?
Yeah, oh yes.
And go and play with their children? And...
I'll tell you a funny little story.
Great.
Because my mother and father, both being English, so she was very strict with meals and things, you know. And I said, right. She used to go up and see the cook. Yes, Doña Teresa, what are you going to do today? And she said, well, we'll have potatoes. We'll have this. That's cook. Yeah. And I hated potatoes. Anyway, I used to go up to the dining room and look to see what the menu was. And I didn't think much of it, so I used to sneak out to the dining room and down to... or Philly made the meals and things, you know.
Yeah.
And my favourite was black beans and rice. So I love black beans. And chili, plenty of chili.
Yeah.
Hot, you know, hot stuff. Anyway, after I had my my little session with the cook and all that business, my mother said, Ryan, lunch is on the table. And I thought, oh, crumbs, you know. My mother used to say, well, come in, you know, sit down, have some lunch. He said, well, I'm not very hungry, Mum. I said, what? You've been with those Indians again.
So you used to eat with them. You used to have the rice.
Yeah, that's right.
I had the rice and the beans and the chili. You went back and the last thing you wanted was potatoes.
Absolutely.
I bet you couldn't even fit in one potato after that.
So I didn't like the lunch that was put on our table.
Yeah.
But I loved the black beans and the tortillas, you know, nice big tortillas made of corn.
Mm.
You tear it and use it like a spoon. Or you delicious, yeah.
Well, I've heard a lot of people talk about their, you know, their childhoods, and they used to go and build dens in quarries, or they used to go down the local woods, and people who grew up in around Britain. But I imagine you had access to a whole different world of nature.
Yes, I can show you pictures of my pet monkey was Pancho, a black long-tailed monkey.
You had a monkey?
Yeah. Pancho, Panchito. Pancho was a big one.
Yeah.
Panchito was a small one.
You had more than one monkey as a pet.
Yeah,
oh, my God, I can't tell you how jealous I am. Do you know how many little kids, you know, in Britain, you know, that their dream is to have a pet monkey?
Uh-huh. Well, anyway, I had the monkeys. What I did was from one tree, I took a wire all across down to the next tree.
Yeah.
So, okay, so the monkey can go from that tree, can come down, run along with the wire, and up the other tree.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's what Pancho and Panchito did. Until one morning.
Yeah.
I woke up to see, because I used to give them bananas and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I said, I go, blimey, where's Pancho, you know? The tree was empty. And I walked and I looked down and I said, and all of a sudden I saw this little black dot in the distance.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Pancho. I started running to catch up to it, you know. And he turned around, he looked at me, and he started running the other way. Anyway, I caught up with him, but as I caught up, I put my foot on the chain, you know, to stop it running on.
Yeah.
And when he saw me do that, he then chased me. I turned around to run like mad the other side, with a monkey behind me. Yeah, that was Pancho.
So what kind of monkey was it?
The long tail ones, you know, these...
Oh, the little...
Little black monkeys, yes, you know, with a long tail.
Yes, yes, I know the ones you mean.
And they climb up the tree. The tail is their third, fourth finger, you know?
Yeah.
Do everything with that tail. And they don't let it go until they've got another handful of whatever, you know?
So did you used to... You must have gone on adventures all the time in the, you know, Was it in the forests, or was it quite rainforesty where you were?
That was the command. It was a jungle, basically.
Yeah.
You know, the places we had were cultivated because of the coffee, we're planting coffee and all that sort of thing.
Of course.
So we had coffee fields, you know.
What was your schooling like there?
Well, when I first went to school I was always at boarding schools.
Yeah.
In my youth. And my dad, in fact, my dad built a school for us, you know, on his patch of land.
Mm.
So we had a Volcán and the school in Volcán. And then we had an American teacher, Miss Baker, she was our teacher, but she lived with us for a long time, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Miss Baker. She's a lovely old lady, actually.
Yeah.
She obviously passed away now. And then I had. Then I went to a German school. Before the war, this was.
Yeah.
And I was at a German boarding school. I could speak good German at one time. German, Spanish. I mean, I was pretty good with all these languages. Yeah.
Did you enjoy learning? Or did you enjoy the school? You know, the process of.
I didn't at the beginning. I mean, I was a rebel.
Well, you had this whole playground of amazing jungle out there.
Land of eternal sunshine, you know.
Yeah.
Guatemala. Beautiful place, beautiful with the volcanoes. We had six volcanoes in the background.
Were they active volcanoes?
Yeah, Fuego.
Did they? Did were you ever there when any of them?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really? What was
actually,
that like?
Actually, from our lounge, my friend Angel Garcia from his lounge didn't have a television. Why? Because we got the scene in front of us here, the big window, and that's where we used to see the volcano erupt every night, you know? Oh, and I've been at that volcano 7 times in my youth, you know. Not Pacaya. That was Pacaya. The other one, Acatenango, is the other one.
Yeah.
And I could go up there. You take me about 3 hours to get to the top of the volcano.
Yeah.
But I could come down with the lava sliding down and right down to the bottom with stones sliding. And I would do that in about 10 minutes.
What, like surfing?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, my God.
That's it. You know, you
that's
all
incredible.
The lava state. You're going with the lava.
You didn't have. You must have melted your shoes.
Oh, well, it didn't do the shoes any good, you know, leather shoes in particular.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible.
When I look back over the years, you know, I took everything for granted, you know. Living in Volcán was, you know, amongst the Indians, I knew them and they knew me, and their children were growing up while I was growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. We used to have a taxidermist used to come to Guatemala in the early days.
Yeah.
Looking for snakes and frogs, and this is his name was Larry Stewart.
Yeah.
An American. Well, he used to stay with us, but actually he used to catch snakes more than anything. And this is why he got the nickname of Pancho Mataculebras. Pancho Mataculebras.
What does that mean?
Pancho, the killer of snakes.
So he used to come out, he was a taxi, he used to come out, hunt snakes, catch them, and then stuff them.
That's it.
And yeah. Presumably take them back and sell them for...
That's right. Yeah, he worked for the university in Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he did them beautiful birds, stuffed birds, you know. And I used to love to go with him because, you know, I had my rifle, and tutu rifle and all that sort of... And...
So did you used to go out on his little kind of expeditions with him?
Yeah. I love going out with the Pancho Mataculebras.
Yeah, well, that's a cool nickname. I would want to hang out with someone who's called the Killer of Snakes.
yeah.
So you must have seen some incredible wildlife and incredible creatures when you were there.
I had a collection of snakes, in a pickled. I used to have pickled them in a jar, you know.
Yeah.
And we have, coral. It's a coral. It's a little snake. With rings.
Yes.
You know, black, red, beautiful snakes.
Yes.
You only grow about that big. And then we had the worst one, the most dangerous we had was called the Rashkesh, which is Indian for the green snake.
I've heard of those.
What happened was that if you go in the jungle, walking along, always keep your eyes open for it. And anyway, the Rashkesh hangs by its tail. And that's when you go past it and you touch it like that, you know, and it's really poisonous, you know. And you have to pound on you.
I don't think I could have done it. I don't think I could have. I would have been constantly petrified. As I suppose growing up with it, it's just something that you get used to. But honest to God, I'm terrified of snakes. I think I would have just spent all my time crying.
Yeah, the old Rashkesh was a dangerous one because it was green. And you used to hang by its tail like a vine, you know, an ordinary vine. Well, you couldn't see it unless you had your eyes open.
Or till it was too late.
And it would go, had long sleeves, it wouldn't
That's
be so bad.
Amazing.
But then, of course, the Indians, we had a deer, came in the garden. I had my little deer. I don't know where all those photos I've got. It was called, they called him Bam Bambi, obviously, you know, because it was a small deer like a Bambi. And then we had the Igbolai, which is a big fat snake, you know.
Yes.
And when the Indians see that, they all huddled together. Hey, it's here, chase it. And they're all chasing this poor snake, you know, trying to get away.
Is that because it's a big, fat, tasty snake that they can eat?
No, they don't. They wouldn't eat them, no. But it would go from, like, from here to the television.
Yeah. Big, about 8 foot.
Big, big fellow.
Yeah.
And, of course, my practice was get my knife out, all the way down, and inside, and then you peel the outer skin off, you know?
Yeah.
You hold it, your head
like
over
banana.
There. Yeah, like a banana.
Yeah.
Hold head over there, and then you pull the skin, and you pull the skin, and until the body comes out away from the skin.
Yeah.
And then you get some, to cure it, we get some lime, real lime.
Mm.
Take this out, take the snake, turn it over, and you pull this to the skin.
Yeah.
And take it down, take it down, take it down, and let it cure. The sun will kill it.
Of course.
And then you just, when it's cured and it stops smelling as much as it did, we had the old snake there. You know, on the wall, really cool. In my room, I had my big bonnet snakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen them do something similar to that in fishing villages with great big eels. That thing where they hang them on the hook and then slowly pull the skin off,
right.
Just the
that's
way you said.
That's how you get the skin, precisely. And,
that must have been so many, you know, people of certainly my dad's age, you know, they would read, you know, like little boys' own adventure books, and they would read, you know, The Eagle, you know, and they'd all have those little articles about life in the rainforest and life in the jungle, and it felt like a world away for all these kids living in, you know, little semi-detached terraced houses or whatever around Britain, finding things. And that was your childhood.
Yeah, yeah.
Was amongst all of that with your two pet monkeys
and
going out with the killer of
crocodiles.
You know, a guy called the killer of snakes.
And the crocodiles. I had two crocodiles.
Oh, my God. I would have been a blubbering wreck.
you need a stick with a fork.
Like a V.
Yeah, that's right.
And it wriggles while you pin it down.
And you hold them tight. Now, what happened was that the water was a little bit scarce up where we were.
Yeah.
And the Indians had to walk quite a few miles to get their water from the tap. And I thought, now, where can I? I captured it, and I got hold of it, and I took him down, and I put him in that big puddle of water.
Yeah.
And, of course, I went down the next day to see where it was or what it was doing, and it was dead. Mm. Why? Because the Indian with his machete found that the Indian women couldn't get to the tap for water, so he got his machete down and killed it. And it was ferocious, mind you, because, you know, the teeth are like little saws, so the edge of a saw.
Mm.
You know? So you had to be very careful with that because it's as tough as any old thing, you know, little baby crocodile.
Expressing your love can look many different ways, and with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
all of this was going on, and you were what kind of age? What kind of age were you?
I was born in UCMA.
And
was born right through till I was 20. About 1920.
So that was not only your childhood, but all of your formative years were spent there.
Yeah,
so did you go to university
I went to high school.
Yeah.
But, you know. That
was the boarding school.
Yeah.
And where was the boarding school?
In Guatemala City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mr. Hans Lenson was the headmaster of that school, you know. And it was a very high, very sophisticated schooling, actually.
Yeah.
And people in Guate with money used to send it. That's where they sent their kids, you like. Well, I used to associate with a lot of well-to-do sons and daughters.
Like ambassadors' children and things like that.
Yeah. I can imagine. Like for instance, now there's Rita, the ambassador in Chile.
Yeah.
Rita is my best friend's daughter. She's the ambassador in.
Goodness me.
Yeah. A very clever girl. She's a lawyer. And a very clever girl, actually. And Enrique, almost the president of Guatemala. Mm. He was my best friend. And he said to me, hey, Brian, the elections are starting next week.
Yeah.
And maybe we could do, you know, keep with us to foment the movement, as it were.
Sure.
Anyway, he said, look, Brian, if I win the next election, you're going to be my ambassador in London because you can speak the language of Hachi when we can't speak that language, but you can. So we shook hands on that. Okay, don't forget. And I think, I've got a good job for life, Steve, I know. anyway, the president, the elections came up.
Mm.
And, of course, everyone looks to see who. And our friend, Enrique's best friend, didn't win.
Yeah.
So I went up to the house and I said, hey, Enrique, what happened there, you know? How come he's there? He said, you know, you were shook on that. You know, shaking
up. Yeah.
Anyway, he said, I'm sorry, Brian. He says, I didn't win the elections because I'm too ugly. This is Enrique's joke, you know.
Yeah. When you were young, what were your ambitions? What did you want to be when you grew up?
The president of Guatemala.
I can imagine there were probably some good perks with that job.
Yeah, well, yes.
So back in Guatemala, you were up to the age of, you know, Guatemala up City. To your...
Guatemala City.
Guatemala City. Yeah.
We left the farm, you know.
Oh, how old were you when you left the farm?
Well, yeah, about 20.
About 20?
Yeah.
And do you remember what your first job was? Did you work on the farm or was...
Oh, I was in charge of, I was in charge of foreign passports. I worked for the Guatemalan government.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And what happened was that once you're, you know, in that business, you know, you've got people, consuls and ambassadors and, you know, and Enrique got me a nice job, question number. I used to deal with the passports.
Yeah.
You know, foreign passports in particular.
Sure.
Speaking English and all that sort of business.
Yeah.
That was an advantage. Hence, I got a letter there. I was in diplomatic corps in the end. Yeah.
Wow.
And my dad's always been in the diplomatic corps. Once he sold the farm and all that sort of business.
Sure.
This is why they moved to Guatemala City to a certain extent. And I used to stay there and do my bits and pieces in the farm and all that sort of business, you know.
So you worked in government.
Yeah.
Which is how you made all these contacts with the people who are running for office and
that's right, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit now about when you left Guatemala. What happened next? What was your next chapter of your life?
I met my dear wife.
Yeah.
I was in England. No job. Because, you know, my parents came back to England. My mother comes from... My grandmother comes from Bournemouth. She's a Bournemouth girl.
Yeah. It sounds so strange to hear all this talk of volcanoes and and monkeys and snakes and crocodiles, and then we're suddenly back in Bournemouth. That must have felt that way to you too, did it?
I hated it. Going back to Bournemouth, cold, freezing cold.
God.
And my grand was very good to us. They looked after me to a certain extent. But I was in Bournemouth when my brother was on leave. He was in the Merchant Navy.
Yeah.
And he was on leave, and he said to me, "Hey, Brian, I'll draw you up to Southampton, and I'll see the Marine Superintendent.
Yeah.
And see if I can get you a job." We went and saw Mr. Brown, piano. Anyway, I can give you a job, but unfortunately, it's going to be not a very good job. You work for it, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I don't
like
mind
a basic
that.
Job.
I'll do anything. Yeah. And I joined as a DHU. You know what that is?
No.
A DHU is deckhand uncertified.
Ah. That's kind of the bottom rung, isn't it? Somewhere to work up from.
That's it. I worked up.
Yeah.
And then bit by bit, I worked my way up. OS, ordinary seaman.
Yeah.
DHU, deckhand uncertified.
Yeah.
AB, able seaman. And then bit by bit, I worked myself up. And I was next to the captain, Brian O'Donnell, next to the captain. And that was my job. Treasure Jones was my skipper.
So you went right from the basics straight up to all the way up that ladder.
Yeah.
That's a huge achievement, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
and this is the Merchant Navy.
Merchant Navy.
Yeah.
I've got quite a few certificates.
Yeah.
Certificates. But yeah, that was, Stirling Castle was my first ship. And I worked hard on that ship. But bit by bit, I went on to the Athelos Castle, the Pretoria, the Preston, the Vikings and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And eventually with Cunard, I took over the writer's job with Cunard, where, fortunately, my dear wife was there waiting for me.
Oh, really?
And this is where, this is how I met June, when I was with Cunard.
So how was it that you met?
Well, I used to have the run of the ship, actually, and that job I had was a good job.
Yeah.
I had the run of the ship. And to get from the end or the stern of the ship, if you like,
yeah,
you had to go downstairs underneath all the working surfaces. You walk from A to B under the ship, the works. And whenever I worked past, June was there. Doing some knitting. And she used to say, "Oh, hello." I say, "Oh, hello." And I said, "Would you like a cup of coffee?" I said, "Well, not yet. I mean, I've got to get to the after end of the ship."
So was she a passenger on the ship?
No,
or was she working on the ship?
She was in charge of the nursery.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, she said, "On my way back, I'll probably have a cup of coffee."
Yeah.
So I used to walk back, have a cup of coffee. Right, thank you very much. And it went like that each time I worked.
It sounds like she had her eye on you.
You better ask her about that. Anyway, so, and that's the way I met June. And then she joined the ship for a while. And then I went back to, Southern Cross and all that sort of business, good years of my life messing around.
So what was the business of the ships that you were on? What kind of work was it that they were doing?
Cruising passengers.
Ah, okay.
They're all not workships, not banana boats or anything of that nature.
Sure.
I wasn't in the catering department, in other words. I was on the deck department. I wasn't in the engine room.
You were the public face.
Yeah, right. And on the ships, you have three positions. You have catering, which is the hotel business.
Yes.
Okay. You have engine room.
Yeah.
Which is to do with
the mechanics.
And of course, you have the deck department. which is where I was, you know, my office, my little office there.
Yeah.
And I used to sunbathe in the tropics, you know, going through down to Cape Town.
Well, I was going to ask that. What was the route? Where was it in the world that you used to go?
Cape Town. Leave at Southampton at 7 o'clock on the dot.
Yeah.
At 4 o'clock on dot.
Yeah.
14 days at sea going down to Cape Town. Now, obviously, I used to love that because it was I was looking for hot climates, as it were,
yeah,
warmer climates, and blow me, I got a job there, sunning myself on deck.
Oh, that's perfect, isn't
absolutely
it?
And my little office at the back, and I was never bothered. And when I left, I got married.
Do you remember your wedding day?
My wedding day, yes, I do.
Was that in England or was that?
Yeah, yeah, lovely country outlook, you know. Aunt Dorothy Corbett Winder, she had a lovely house, lovely land, you know.
Yeah.
And we had my wedding outside with all the silver and all that sort of thing, champagne,
lovely.
And yeah, it was a nice wedding.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah. But Aunt Dorothy, she passed away. And the funny thing is, with Aunt Dorothy, we used to, if I went 10 o'clock in the morning to see her in her house, I mean, she had a big lounge and all that. And she'd always, the first thing that she said to me, or to you, is, oh, hello, darling. Hello, darling, would you like a glass of champagne?
Well, that's the only civilised way to start the
yeah,
day.
Quite.
If it's good enough for Churchill.
Right.
Then
a cigar.
Enough, yeah, it was good enough for the likes of. She didn't start, well, she didn't have a cigar
no,
as well.
No,
did
no,
she?
No, no. It was Uncle Bertie, Uncle Windy. Windy, that's her husband.
Yeah.
Who passed away. But Aunt Dorothy was really quite. They had racehorses, you know. And she had the Partridge family had a beautiful place out in the country, you know.
Wow.
And you drive up, you know, with all the daffodils in full bloom by the side, right up to the house. That was it. Darling, you like a glass of champagne?
that sounds like a lovely lifestyle.
Yeah, well, it was. Yeah,
it sounds
was
almost
nice.
P.G. Woodhouse. That's perfect. So just one of you, it's one of your aunties. So how long were you in the Merchant Navy for? How long did you manage to keep going back and forth between Cape Town?
A few years. Because I was on the ferries, actually, in the end.
Yeah.
You know, Thoris and ferries. We used to take the ship, you know. I used to take the ship, you know, steer across back.
Sure.
You know, yeah. I didn't like it too much in the end because it wasn't any more pleasure. I mean, it was rough seas across the channel, you
yeah.
know, hanging on to God on the days.
Yes, yeah, I can imagine.
Oh, I'll tell you what, we used to see, hit so much rough weather there, I'll tell you.
I can well believe it.
Yeah, and in fact, I remember one of the second officer, you know, Norwegian chaps, you know, and we hit some bad weather. In fact, it was said it is rough out there, so you better watch what you're doing and all that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we hit this rough weather, and the second officer was in a panic. And I said, he didn't show you the strength of the cabin. I'm in charge of the boat and all that. So he was a scared stiff. You had to look after the guy, you know.
It sounds like you had the most incredible, you know, I'm so envious, but you can probably tell, had the most incredible childhood in the heat and then came back and then cleverly found a way to keep going back to the sunshine and the warmer temperature as part of your job.
Yeah.
It sounds like you literally had the best of every world.
Absolutely.
As you grew up and as you led your life.
That's right. And I appreciate that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm aware of that, you know. And sometimes, you know, with my family, sometimes they don't quite understand my motives for various things.
Yeah. So if you were to pass on a piece of advice you know, or a lesson that you've learned over the course of your life? What would you say it is?
Okay. Now, because I was in the driving business, driving tuition,
yes.
In the end, I worked, you know, my years at sea.
Yeah.
I can quote you the definition of a good driver. What would you think about definition of a good driver? What do you think a driver should be?
Observant.
Observant.
And I would say observant and courteous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Careful.
Careful. Yeah. All right. Well, would you like me to give you the definition?
I would. Yes, please. Yeah.
Is one who drives in such a manner that no matter what situation he may be confronted with, and from whatever source, whether it's arising from unsafe behavior of other road users, state of weather, road or vehicle, no action or lack of action on his behalf will contribute in any degree to an accident situation.
I like that.
No action or lack of action.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, and I tell you what's good is you can apply that to life.
Oh yeah,
which
absolutely.
Is why you know.
Absolutely. No, I usually do actually.
Yeah.
Trying to be funny. Okay, can I talk? No, I was that so catchy. No, it's not catchy. But I could say, this is where I get stuck. You know, I think probably because of my I have a problem.
Sure.
Beginning with. You know, what do you call that? That disease? Alzheimer's.
Sure, I understand.
I'm on the touch of the Alzheimer's, so I do have my little moments, where, you know.
Yes, I understand. I know there's people in my family have the same thing, so it's just those little stops and then starts.
I think all of a sudden you go dead. I say, you know, what the heck was I thinking? What was I thinking?
Yeah.
I mean, this happens to people, I can see. Yeah. So one, I have to watch that.
Yeah, I understand.
I mean, writing. I can't write anything because I forget what the sentence is when I was thinking of a sentence, and I can't think of the end of what I was writing.
You suddenly find yourself halfway through a sentence and you don't know how it began. Yeah.
What was I thinking there? What is it? How come? Let me have a look at this. How do you write that? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's stupid, but that's the way it is.
No, I completely understand.
And that was Brian. Hearing him talk so articulately about his own symptoms was quite a thing, but it was also amazing to hear him talk with such passion about his own extraordinary life. As you'll have just heard in abundance, this podcast is about sharing fascinating stories, but there are well over 1 million chronically lonely people in the UK who have no one to share their stories with. If you'd like to know more about ways to change this, then please go online and visit campaigntoendloneliness.org and find out how together we can make loneliness a thing of the past. Thanks again to Brian, and also thanks to Acast for hosting the show. See you next time.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.